This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Turkey goes after the Islamic State. President Obama wraps up his African trip with a focus on terrorism. A possible new breakthrough in diabetes care.
Sometimes if you take too much insulin, it can cause hypoglycemia, which is sometimes even fatal. So that's why we tried to develop a closed-loop-based system, which can mimic the function of the pancreas.
Eminem throws some punches at a new boxing film. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. The Turkish military launched a new round of airstrikes against Kurdish rebels Tuesday. Two F-16 jets hit positions belonging to the banned Kurdistan Workers Party, the PKK, in southeast Turkey, hours after NATO voiced support for Ankara's response to what are called terrorism in Turkey. There were no reports of fresh strikes on Islamic State positions in Syria, which began in parallel with the attacks on the PKK last Friday. NATO held an emergency meeting Tuesday in Brussels at Turkey's request to discuss the conflicts in Syria and Iraq. NATO said the security of the alliance is indivisible and it stands in strong solidarity with Turkey. The United States is working with Turkey on an attack plan to clear Islamic State insurgents from northern Syria. U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby says what is under consideration is deepening cooperation with Turkey to counter the IS threat.
I don't have any announcements today about what that's going to entail, but we are certainly cognizant of the fact that 2 million-some-odd refugees are in Turkey, and the Turks are carrying a heavy load in trying to deal with that. One of the reasons why we continue to have discussions with the Turks is to explore ways that we can work together with them through the coalition to go after ISIL. This is a country that has a border they're concerned about. They've got 2 million refugees. They've agreed to host a train and equip site inside Turkey, and now they've allowed us to have access to some of their bases to conduct airstrikes and missions against ISIL inside Syria. And they have agreed to do more. And we're just going to have to see where this goes in the future. As I said to at the outset, we're going to continue to talk with them. We're going to continue to try to explore areas where that cooperation can improve.
Kirby says the U.S. has been assured that Turkey's airstrikes in Syria are aimed at the Islamic State group. Northwestern University Middle East professor Nabil Khoury told International Edition's Victor Beatty that Turkey's decision to launch airstrikes in Syria and Iraq may be the result of Kurdish successes against IS.
What has been happening recently in the last, say, at least 6 months, if not more, is that Syrian Kurds, along with the Syria Free Army, have been successful in pushing ISIL out of several areas in northern Syria. I think selfishly, the Turks are worried that continued success by the Kurds may lead to an independent or at least autonomous Kurdish region along their borders, one that would involve Syrian Kurds, the PKK, and possibly Iraqi Kurds as well. That is not something that the Turks would like to see happen. So I think part of the motivation is, rather than have the Kurds do most of the work against ISIL and therefore benefit from it in terms of more territory that they control, the Turks want to do it themselves. And that way, it would be their forces that are clearing out areas, and it would be their forces which would be left in control, not Kurdish forces.
Doesn't that complicate matters for Washington in that the U.S. Is working hand-in-hand with the Kurds in northern Iraq?
Yes, it does. And to be working with two conflicted partners, the Turks and the Kurds, is complicated unless you can get them to work together. That part needs some fancy diplomacy, which we haven't seen.
Northwestern University Middle East professor Nabil Khoury says the Turks can be effective against Islamic State fighters, but the United States must facilitate a diplomatic understanding between its Kurdish allies and Ankara on the future of liberated IS territory to avoid a future clash between two U.S. partners. He was speaking with International Edition's Victor Beatty. Time now to look at what people are saying about Turkey's fight against IS on social media. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is in the studio with the latest from the State Department and more. Hello, G.
Hi, Ray. John Kirby, the U.S. State Department spokesman, sent out multiple tweets Tuesday on Turkey, NATO, and the IS group. He wrote in the latest tweet that it was clear at briefing. Turkey is critical ally in fight against ISIL. Our flight from Turkey bases enhances shared efforts. He's on Twitter at @StateDPTSPOX.
But he can't be the only one who's tweeting about it, is he?
Absolutely. Senator John McCain actually tweeted one thing on the issue. McCain tweeted a link to the latest statement on his website at mccain.senate.gov. He wrote in the statement that he's concerned about reports of Turkish forces shelling Kurdish towns in Syria.
Now that's interesting. What kind of hashtags are people using on Twitter?
Ray, there are two main hashtags related to this issue. The first one is #NATOStopErdogan. That's, of course, referring to Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. And that hashtag has been used more than 8,600 times in the last 24 hours. The second hashtag is a bit longer than that. Get this. It's #TurkeyAttackKurds, not ISIS. And that hashtag has been used nearly 1,000 times. But I couldn't find a hashtag in English that supports the Turkish government's actions on the Kurdish people. So at least on Twitter, the popular opinion is against the Turkish government on the issue. Ray?
Thanks for the update, G. Social media reporter G. Abby Lee. And you can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. That's JEEABBEYLEE. And this is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. President Obama wrapped up his East African trip Tuesday by becoming the first sitting American leader to address the African Union at its headquarters in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. In wide-ranging remarks, Mr. Obama spoke again about one of the main issues of his tour, terrorism in the region.
In Angola, Mozambique, Liberia, Sierra Leone, we've seen conflicts end and countries work to rebuild. But from Somalia and Nigeria to Mali and Tunisia, terrorists continue to target innocent civilians. Many of these groups claim the banner of religion, but hundreds of millions of African Muslims know that Islam means peace, and we must call groups... We must call groups like Al-Qaeda, ISIL, Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, we must call them what they are, murderers.
President Obama in an unprecedented address to the 54-nation African Union. International Edition's Jeffrey Young's been looking into the issue of security in East Africa. He spoke with analyst Rich Downey of the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington with the focus on Al-Shabaab.
Al-Shabaab has been a threat initially to Somalia and now to the broader East Africa region for more than a decade now. Somalia really as a collapsed state, and al-Shabaab succeeded in, first of all, taking over the capital, Mogadishu, and then control of much of the south part of the country for many many years. And really the problem, the threat has evolved more recently with al-Shabaab launching more attacks outside of Somalia as well, mainly targeting those countries that were committing peacekeepers to the peacekeeping force in Somalia, so Uganda, Kenya, and trying to hit Ethiopia as well.
I know that we've seen al-Shabaab activity in Kenya, and you just explained one of the reasons why Kenya is targeted. I understand that they're also trying to do an extensive amount of recruiting in Kenya to try to pick up new followers and to pick up money. Can you talk about that?
That's right. They use fairly sophisticated outreach techniques, using the Swahili language to reach out to young, alienated people, saying, you know, we're on your side in your struggles against the government and so forth. So they've really managed to recruit a large number of Kenyan, many young people into the ranks and use them to launch attacks inside Kenyan territory, mainly in Nairobi, the capital, and also on the coast around Mombasa.
How robust of a response have the East African nations provided against al-Shabaab, Kenya especially? Are they fighting back?
They are fighting back, and the response is, well, it's taken a while to get going, and they've learned some tough lessons, taken a lot of casualties on the way, but the response is fairly robust. The peacekeeping mission, AMISOM, that actually operates inside Somalia, has succeeded in pushing al-Shabaab out of the capital, Mogadishu, and from some of the other territory they controlled. But al-Shabaab has sort of fallen back onto sort of hit-and-run style attacks, bomb attacks, and it's very, very difficult to respond effectively and deal with that kind of threat, as the United States has learned in other parts of the world.
The American President Barack Obama, in his East Africa tour, stressed the need for stepped-up fighting against terrorism and called on the countries to work more closely with the United States. Do you see that sort of coordination possibly?
I see it happening. It's, you know, some of the African contributors to AMISOM have worked increasingly well with each other. Ethiopia, Kenya, Uganda, Burundi have all played their part. The problem is that they all have sort of slightly different political objectives in Somalia, and that they're not always working from the same page, so to speak. But the U.S. has played an important role in funding the training of these peacekeepers, and it will continue, it seems, to step up that role in the coming months and years.
That was Rich Downey of the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, speaking with International Edition's Jeffrey Young. Trading in China's financial markets was volatile Tuesday, but ended lower a day after the country's stocks suffered their steepest plunge in 8 years. The benchmark Shanghai Composite Index closed down about 1.7%. On Monday, that index lost 8.5%, the biggest single-day plunge since 2007. The turmoil in China is affecting global investors and also adding pressure to oil prices. Business reporter Alexis Christophorus has more from our New York bureau.
Well, the Chinese stock market meltdown is just adding to oil's slippery slide. We had crude oil falling to a six-month low to around $47.15 a barrel. Now, China's already volatile benchmark stock index has lost 10% in just the last two trading days. And most household debt is linked to real estate rather than the stock market. But with Chinese economic growth struggling to stick at 7%, analysts are saying demand for crude may not be enough to help mop up a global supply glut. Brent is now trading at around $52, and some analysts believe it will dip below 50. And also compounding the uncertainty over the health of the Chinese economy is, of course, concern about rising global oil production, especially in the U.S., where we really see no signs of it slowing down. Also, British oil giant BP said second quarter profits tumbled 64% as crude prices slump. One analyst at Bank of America says oil prices are experiencing what he calls a double dip because of the supply glut that he believes will persist for at least another year and a half. Bank of America today cutting its third quarter estimate for Brent to $50 a barrel from $54.
Business reporter Alexis Christophers in New York. Still to come, a smart skin patch for diabetes care. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Smoking cigarettes is a well-known health hazard and mortality risk. Disease such as Ebola can also radically shorten lifespan. But researchers at the University of Cambridge have released a new study about the impact of having multiple chronic conditions. They find that having more than one of the so-called cardiometabolic conditions, stroke, heart attack, or type 2 diabetes, does not bode well for long life. Their startling conclusion, having two of these conditions by age 60 reduced life expectancy by some 12 years in men and 13 years for women. This was a shorter life expectancy than even that of lifelong smokers. The researchers say their findings highlight the importance of heart disease and stroke prevention for diabetes patients. Health professionals say that healthy lifestyle habits can improve heart and overall health. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition from Washington. The first Republican presidential debate will take place August 6th in Cleveland, Ohio. A mad scramble is underway among some of the contenders who fear they will be excluded from the event. VOA's Jim Malone has details.
Under the debate rules, only 10 of the 16 Republican contenders will be allowed to take part in the first debate. Those candidates who fail to place in an average of 5 national public opinion polls will be excluded. That has set off a mad scramble among several Republican contenders who are at the lower end of recent poll rankings. Real estate mogul Donald Trump has shot to the top of national polls in recent weeks, tapping into what he says is voter frustration with the political status quo.
People are tired of incompetent politicians. And that's, by the way, on both sides. We don't have victories anymore. And people are tired of it. And that's what's happening to me.
Some of the Republican contenders have ramped up their own rhetoric in hopes of cutting through the intense media coverage of Trump's rise in the polls. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee is drawing lots of attention for slamming President Barack Obama over the Iran nuclear deal.
He's so naive, he would trust the Iranians and he would take the Israelis and basically march them to the door of the oven.
Huckabee's comments drew condemnation from some of his Republican rivals, including former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, and even from President Barack Obama during his visit to Ethiopia.
We're creating a culture that is not conducive to good policy or good politics. The American people deserve better.
Trump and his recent comments attacking illegal immigrants and some of his Republican rivals could dominate next week's debate. The debates will be a key test for all the Republican contenders, says analyst John Fortier.
I think the debates will be important. That plus the ability to raise money and the ability to show that you have staying power and can win in the early states are really what you're trying to prove in the first year.
The Republican race has overshadowed the Democratic primary battle, where former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton remains a strong favorite, even though Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders continues to draw large, enthusiastic crowds. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Researchers have developed what's being called a smart insulin patch that could improve diabetes care. The skin patch is a thin square no bigger than a small coin. It would do away with painful injections. VOA's Jessica Berman explains.
Almost 400 million people around the world live with diabetes. Some require insulin injections, sometimes many times a day, because their bodies produce little or no insulin, a hormone that's needed to regulate the levels of sugar in the body. Without the shots, people with so-called type 1 diabetes would die. But the injections may someday be replaced by a thin, smart skin patch covered with more than 100 tiny painless needles. The needles have storage units loaded with insulin. Zhen Gu is a professor of biomedical engineering at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. He says the skin patch can be programmed to automatically sense the amount of glucose in the blood, and if blood sugar levels get too high, release a precise dose of insulin through the microneedles, each about the size of an eyelash. It's a so-called closed-loop system. That means there's a feedback loop that detects sugar levels and delivers insulin automatically. Such a system has long been the ultimate goal of diabetes researchers trying to eliminate human error in the management of the disease. Gu says the skin patch minimizes the risk of taking too much insulin.
Sometimes if you take too much insulin, it can cause hypoglycemia, which is sometimes even fatal. So that's why we tried to develop a closed-loop based system, which can mimic the function of the pancreas.
The pancreas is the organ that produces and secretes insulin. In healthy people, the pancreas is extremely sensitive to blood sugar levels, regulating them with precise doses of insulin. But people with type 1 diabetes have to test their blood regularly to try to figure out exactly how much insulin they need to take. Some patients with more common type 2 diabetes also have trouble regulating their blood sugar levels with diet and exercise and have to give themselves insulin shots. After many years of fluctuating blood sugar levels, many diabetics develop severe complications, including blindness, limb amputations, and kidney failure. Gu and colleagues found the smart patch could automatically lower and control blood glucose levels in mice with type 1 diabetes for up to 9 hours.
So our eventual aim is like one patch. You can maintain blood sugar in the normal range for a couple of days.
The work is published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The smart insulin skin patch could potentially make life easier and less painful for type 1 diabetics and those with advanced type 2 diabetes. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Rapper Eminem teams up with No Doubt's Gwen Stefani for a new song from the boxing film called Southpaw. International Edition's David Byrd talked with Border Crossing's host Larry London about the song Kings Never Die.
You might be a fan of his from The Slim Shady or other songs that he's put on the radio, but Eminem has got a new one out, and he teams up with Gwen Stefani from No Doubt for Kings Never Die. Larry, this is from the soundtrack for the new 50 Cent produced movie Southpaw, right?
That's right. It's one of those boxing films. I saw the movie, and it ain't no Rocky, that's for sure.
Well, it's Jake Gyllenhaal, first of all.
Jake Gyllenhaal is in the film. And by the way, Eminem was up for the same role, but he turned it down. In fact, he was negotiating to play the lead role,
right,
as the boxer whose name is Billy Hope in the film, but
right,
he said, no, eventually deciding against it. So, yes, Jake Gyllenhaal, Rachel McAdams, 50 Cent, who's in the film.
And this song is a, it's, you know, it's kind of one of those angry rap anthem, get your blood up. It'd be great to work out to. It'd be a great workout song.
Eminem's got three songs on the soundtrack. And by the way, as a side note, this film was scored by James Horner, who passed away in June.
Right, the guy who did Titanic.
That's right. This is his last film that he put music in, and the end, they say in memory of James Horner.
I can hear the drummer drumming. In the trumpet, someone's trying to summon someone. I know something's coming, but I'm running from it to be standing at the summit and plummet. How come it wasn't what I thought it was? Was it too good to be true? Have nothing, get it all, but too much of it, then lose it again. Did I swallow hallucinogens? Cause if not, where the hell did it go? Cause here I sit in Lucifer's den by the touch of and just choosing to sin. Even if it means I'm selling my soul just to be the undisputed again.
This particular song that Eminem and Gwen Stefani perform doesn't appear until you're two-thirds of the way through the film. It's right near the end with the big fight, which I'm not going to reveal too much about, but the big fight that comes at the end, and you hear this song playing. And when you hear it in the film, you don't really hear much Gwen Stefani, but when you hear the song itself, she's featured in the song. You can tell it's her.
Now, this is not a big departure for Eminem because he's, you know, kind of in your face. But Gwen Stefani is more kind of mellow type thing. So this is a little, is she branching out with this tune?
Well, I can't necessarily say that, but she has been working on a new solo album. She's slow on the project. She's been working with Pharrell. We don't have a date. We don't have a title. We know very little about it. I know that she's doing some shows with No Doubt. And she's also going to be coaching on The Voice, replacing Christina Aguilera here in the U.S.
Okay, well, that's VOA's Larry London. You can hit him up on Twitter. That's at @VOA_music. You can also watch his show, which is Border Crossings. That's on our website, www.voanews.com. If you want to send us a tweet, we're at @VOA_IE. And if you want to send one to me, I'm at @David_DBird. When I close my eyes through the passage of time, kings never die. Kings never die.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. Let your fingers do the walking to get more news and information on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
4 years ago this month, South Sudan celebrated its independence with much jubilation and great hope that a split from the North would finally put an end to decades of civil war. That, unfortunately, was not to be. The relative peace that followed lasted all of 18 months. In December 2013, a political schism evolved into widespread conflict that, in part, devolved along ethnic lines. The conflict is remarkable in its brutality against civilians. This has been stated in a number of reports from NGOs and the United Nations that take note of human rights violations and abuses committed by both sides. They range from ethnically motivated murders to gang rapes and the mass destruction and looting of civilian property. Thousands have been killed. 2.4 million have been displaced, and almost 4.6 million are in need of humanitarian aid. On June 27th, the United States urged the United Nations Security Council to blacklist six rival commanders from South Sudan for threatening that country's peace and stability. On the government side, they are Major General Mario Changwang Yaw Mangwak, Lieutenant General Gabriel Jok Riak, and Major General Santino Deng Wal. Rebel leaders to be sanctioned are Major Generals Simon Gatwich Dual, James Koang Chual, and Peter Gadet. In a July 1st vote, the Security Council agreed. All six had previously been sanctioned by our Treasury Department regarding their financial transactions. South Sudan's political leadership has squandered the international goodwill that accompanied its independence and pursued political and economic self-interest that has produced only violence, displacement, and suffering for the South Sudanese people, said U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Samantha Power. Political and military leaders on all sides of this conflict must put aside their self-serving ambitions, end the fighting, and engage in negotiations to establish a transitional government.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
It is 5-5.